Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, February 21st. Three high schools qualify for state decathlon contests. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Three Odessa high schools have qualified for upcoming academic decathlon competitions. The state meet is February 25th and 26th in San Antonio, and there is a secondary meet in Frisco on the same dates for scholarships and state rankings, Director of Advanced Academic Services Kristen Veasley said. Nationals will be April 21st to 23rd in Frisco. New Tech Odessa was first in the state in their classification. Veasley said they are going to be the number one seed in San Antonio and could qualify for nationals in April. Permian High School and Odessa Collegiate Academy are going to the gathering in Frisco. Quote, three of the four teams made it to one of the state competitions, which is super exciting, Veasley said. Veasley said this is the first year Ector County ISD has ever had three teams progress. This is the first time New Tech will go as a number one seed, but they have been to state twice before. New Tech decathlon coach Damian Guyton said his team has done great so far. Quote, they placed first at their regional competition. It's the first time our team has placed that high at regionals. It was very exciting, Gayton said. Quote, I think our team will do great at the state competition. There's a lot of great teams attending, but all our team can do is try their best. No matter what the outcome is, we are very proud of them, he added. Michael Crowder, decathlon coach for Odessa Collegiate Academy, said this is a great moment for the students on his team. Quote, all the teams in ECISD have been tough competition for us this year and have prepared us for the meet ahead. Sending three teams to state is a great accomplishment for ECISD, Crowder said in an email. Continuing the quote, we're thrilled to have advanced this far, and I'm sure our students will give their best effort when the time comes. Our team has been competitive all year and getting better each month. We each have one more meet. Anything can happen, end quote. Permian High School decathlon coach Eric Garcia said his students also worked incredibly hard all year and have met a goal by qualifying for the 2021-22 state tournament. Quote, as the students have advanced through preliminary competitions, their motivation has increased after each competition, placing second in the regional tournament. The overall goal is to provide a new experience to a team that has overcome adversity and strives for success next week. I am exceptionally proud of the students and coaches that helped with the program and the achievements that we have made throughout the year, Garcia said in an email. The competition gets harder as they move through. Quote, last year, due to COVID, they ran into some difficulties with the regional meet, and basically they were just like, okay, we're going to pretend like that never happened. So every team in the state went to state. We don't consider that. We don't count that because it was by default, so this is on merit. This is the first time we've had three teams go. It's incredible, Veasley said. She added that she thinks the teams will do well. Every meet that NTO has competed in, they have progressively gotten better, Veasley said. She noted that the decathlon teams don't stop. Quote, they're a year-round program. They start their season May 1st, and their season begins with getting their curriculum. What happens is USAD, which is United States Academic Decathlon, they pick a topic, and then they go to the experts in the field of that topic. They write basically 5 to 7 chapters of college-level text about that topic. These are developed over the course of several years. This year, the topic was water, Feasley said. The seven topics range from language and literature to art history and social studies and science to math. But there are 10 events such as an essay, speech, and a 7-minute interview. For the essay, they are given 50 minutes to pick one of three topics, brainstorm, compose, and craft a multiple-page, multiple-paragraph essay. Feasley said they are scored based on their content, 80%, and 20% is how well they write, how many spelling errors, and how many grammatical errors they had. On the speech portion, students prepare on any topic and give a 4-minute extemporaneous speech. They are scored on clarity, organization, and how well they present. That's about 70% of their score, Beasley said. The other 30% comes from impromptu. Students are given three possible topics. They pick the one they like best and are given 1 minute to prepare, to outline, and then they have to speak for 2 minutes about the topic. The interview is where students sit down with a panel of judges who interview them for 7 minutes. Students are judged on how well they sit and speak, the clarity of their answers, how well they stay on topic, and how well they answer the question being asked. There are 10 total events, so it's a decathlon. Feasley said there can be 12 competitors on a team. Quote, you have three that actually compete and an alternate. Most of the teams have more than that in the class or in the organization because they've got people competing for those four spots. So, for example, like at Permian, usually they have about 24 in the class and they're competing for those 12 spots to play. Because we're coming off of COVID, the teams are a little bit smaller than they normally run, but there's also a JV team that they play. That's octathlon. It's everything that decathlon does, minus the speech and interview. They've got the same 12, but they can do two teams have an octagon to play. So there's 24 kids that play there. So, total, we could have 36 kids from every campus competing, Feasley said. They can bring 15 students. She added that they can bring their alternatives and observers to the competition. Quote, they won't take that many because the more kids you take, the easier it is for your competitors to be distracted. For the state, most of the teams are just taking their 9 competitors and maybe an observer or two. They're taking their underclassmen so they can see what the state looks like to kind of help generate the I want to go to state, Feasley said. ECIST has had academic decathlon since the early 2000s. Feasley is a former academic decathlon coach at Permian. Quote, we watched the program grow substantially. We were barely keeping 6 kids in class, and we grew to about 36 kids in the class before I stepped out, she said. She added that she couldn't attribute the growth just to notice on social media. Quote, I think there's a lot of word of mouth, and if you have a very charismatic coach, then if you have a winning team, and you do lots of advertisement and lots of recruitment, yes. What I like about decathlon, the original purpose of it was to help support our GT kids and get them into something that was academically geared, but could still be competitive. So if they're not athletic or they're not fine arts, they still have somewhere to go, and it's growth beyond just GT, but they do still target their GT kids. It does give a place for our GT folks to play, Feasley said. Anybody who wants to try, they are more than welcome to try, she added. There are numerous sexual assault resources. This is a guest column from Carol Cates, who is the chief nursing officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. The Crisis Center of West Texas recently held its Dancing with West Texas Stars fundraiser. I was so excited to see a fantastic turnout for this event because the Crisis Center is one of those organizations in this community that even in the worst of times continues to support members of this community. Even in the full shutdown times of the pandemic, they made changes to keep folks safe from COVID and continued with their mission. When people reach out to the crisis center, it literally saves lives, avoids injuries, and stops a cycle of violence that can literally go on for generations. Every cent donated to them goes to making a positive impact in the lives of people who are quite literally in crisis and sets them on a path to a much brighter future. I started out talking about the crisis center because I had a situation recently where someone who was sexually assaulted reached out to me wanting to know where to go for help. There are so many things to think about in terms of help in that situation. There is the physical side with the possibility of injury, pregnancy, and/or sexually transmitted diseases. There is the legal side with law enforcement, evidence collection, and the courts. There can be financial considerations if people need to leave their homes or jobs to be safe. Then there is the emotional side with the mental trauma an attack like this causes. That makes it very hard for just one person or even one organization to help with everything. I also want to emphasize that sexual assault is not isolated to one gender, one age group, one race, one socioeconomic level, or any other one demographic. It can quite literally happen to anyone, and so help must be universal in that way too. This is where the Crisis Center really shines. They are a great conduit for putting together all the pieces in this very complex puzzle, so the person who needs them gets help in every way needed. The physical, the legal, the financial, and the emotional. They don't have restrictions on who they help based on demographics. They help everyone who needs it. The other place I refer people to if they ask me about sexual assault and where to go is an emergency room with a SANE program. Every emergency room can help when someone is sexually assaulted. They can do an exam, treat injuries, collect evidence, involve law enforcement, and contact crisis workers like the wonderful people who work at the crisis center. But emergency rooms that have SANE programs take that a step farther. SANE stands for Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner. Those nurses have thousands of hours of specialized training in how to do examinations on sexual assault victims that collects evidence in the best way possible while preserving the dignity and providing emotional support in the unique way victims need. They have forensic training that makes them an expert witness if the victim chooses to prosecute their assailant and the case goes to court. They also have dedicated spaces and specialized equipment that help facilitate evidence collection and the specialized care the victims need. If you go to any emergency room, even if they don't have a SANE program, they can help you get to one. All you need to do is ask. Finally, and the most important place I can refer people to, is 911. I say that because so often people in these situations are in immediate danger. In situations of immediate danger, victims of sexual assault need the protection of law enforcement and the immediate medical attention by EMS that only 911 can provide. If you take nothing else from this article about where to go in these horrible situations, please take away this. Your immediate safety is the first and biggest priority if you are sexually assaulted. Do everything possible to get away and call 911. I genuinely hope no one reading this ever needs this information. Unfortunately, I also know it is likely someone will. Know that if you ever need such help, those of us who work with the victims of sexual assault want to be there for you, too. We want to make sure you have all the physical, emotional, legal, and financial help you need to get you on the path to a brighter future. Please reach out. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 36,778 total cases, 664 deaths. Midland County, 36,551 total cases, 471 deaths. Texas, 6,575,378 total cases, 83,648 deaths. U.S. cases, 78,269,789 total confirmed cases, and 930,811 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Free drive-through COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR test drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, test will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Early voting for the joint primary election, March 1st, through Friday, will take place at the following locations. Early voting at the Ector County Courthouse Annex, Room 104, 1010 East 8th Street, has been scheduled from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday through Friday. Early voting scheduled at the branch locations will take place from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday through Friday at Kellis Turner Community Building, 2230 Sycamore Drive, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, 2308 Shakespeare Road, Salinas Community Building, 600 West Clement Street, and MCM Elegante Hotel, Hawaii Ballroom, 5200 East University Boulevard. For sample ballots or more information, call the election office at 432-498-4030 in Odessa or 432-688-4890 in Midland, or visit tinyurl.com/3V7ZPCE2 for Ector County, tinyurl.com/2P84B782 in Midland County, or sos.state.tx.us, the State Secretary of State's office. City of Odessa offices will be closed and no trash will be picked up on today in observance of President's Day. Customers with rollout carts normally serviced on Monday can expect service on Tuesday. Customers with rollout carts normally serviced on Tuesday will have their rollout carts serviced on Wednesday. For the full trash schedule, visit tinyurl.com/35EHMJST. In celebration of Midland College's 50th anniversary, the College Art Department is hosting an exhibit of works by retired and former MC art faculty, 3600 North Garfield Street in Midland. The exhibit runs through April 18th in the Allison Fine Arts Building, McCormick Gallery. Gallery hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Fridays. The gallery will be closed the week of spring break, March 7th through 11th. Featured artists are Carol Bailey, Jane Becker, Sarah Gilstrap, John Harmon, Stan Jacobs, Karen Lanier, Kent Moss, Susan Rendell, and Warren Taylor. There is no admission fee. Odessa Retired Teachers Association has scheduled a meeting at noon today at Highland United Methodist Church, 1800 North Dixie Boulevard. A complimentary luncheon will be served. Representative Brooks Landgraf will be the speaker. All ORTA, SPA members and all retired public school personnel are invited to attend. For more information, call 432-770-9363. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center at 1310 North FM 1788 in Midland will present Let's Rock Broadway at 7:30 p.m. today. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. For tickets or information, visit WagnerNoel.com. An oil and gas hiring event has been scheduled from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center, 305 East 5th Street. Job seekers register at the door. Bring ID and copies of your resume. The event is free and open to the public. Visit PermianBasinHiringEvents.com. The Odessa Police Department at 205 North Grant Avenue has scheduled a neighborhood watch meeting from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday at the Odessa Police Department classroom. The program was designed to keep citizens informed of activity occurring in their neighborhoods by forming watch groups within their neighborhoods. The program is in an alliance between the citizens of Odessa and law enforcement. Citizens become the extra set of eyes and ears for law enforcement, reporting suspicious activity to police, along with working together to resolve problem areas. For more information, call Corporal Steve Lesueur at 432-335-3361 or Corporal Michael Hamilton at 432-335-3322. The Ector County Library at 321 West 5th Street has scheduled Read to Felix for children of all ages from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Thursdays at Third Floor Auditorium in the Children's Department. Felix is a therapy dog that loves to be read to. Visit tinyurl.com/23RKC4DU.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with more articles from the Odessa American, published Monday, February 21st. Griffiths says, huge bust in West Odessa. Sheriff Griffiths said Sunday night that his office is working a busy West Odessa scene involving more than 10 arrests. Griffiths said at least 10 to 15 stolen vehicles were found, along with more than 100 pounds of marijuana. 10 people have been arrested and more are being sought in the area of Canyon and Swan, which is just west of Moss Road. He said the cars are believed to have been stolen out of Colorado. Game Rooms on County Agenda by Kim Smith. Ector County Commissioners are scheduled to get an update Tuesday from County Attorney Lee McClendon on possible amendments to the county's game room ordinance. The Odessa City Council wants to join forces with commissioners to help address the proliferation of game rooms throughout the county and the corresponding problems some of them are causing local law enforcement. County Judge Debbie Hayes said McClendon sent the city a proposed interlocal agreement to address the issue and are waiting to hear back if city attorneys are okay with it. McClendon has said he is in favor of keeping game rooms 1,500 feet from neighborhoods instead of the current 300 feet and 1,500 feet away from each other. He'd also like to require them to have an exterior window in the front and ban them from having coverings or tent on the windows to help law enforcement agencies in monitoring their activities. In addition, McClendon said he had also liked to restrict the businesses from having more than 50 games operating at any one time and limiting their hours to 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Sunday through Thursday and 8 a.m. to midnight Friday and Saturday. The commissioners will also address an error that was made during their last meeting. The commissioners voted unanimously to contract with Grant Works Incorporated of Austin to vet organizations seeking some of the county's $32 million in ARPA funds. However, it later came to light that Commissioner Armando Rodriguez's vote should not be counted because he attended the meeting via telephone, Hayes said. Allowances made during COVID-19 are no longer authorized. Commissioners can only vote in person, but no one at the county was aware of that, Hayes said. The commissioners will also discuss purchasing an armored vehicle for the Ector County Sheriff's Office using seized and donated funds Tuesday. The commissioners are also expected to discuss what to do now that the majority of the cemetery plots at the Donna Rabb Addition have been sold. Hayes said the county can theoretically try to purchase homes and land in the area to expand the cemetery or create a cemetery elsewhere. Discuss allowing Fix West Texas to hold a low-cost vaccination clinic on March 5th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at the Ector County Coliseum. Get an update on the Ector County Odessa Schleymeyer Airport. Discuss assigning 11 parking spots to Ector County Health Department staff. Hayes said during jury trial weeks, staff members have difficulty finding places to park. Discuss allowing Ector County Independent School District to hold its bond election on May 7th. Obituaries published in the Odessa American, Monday, February 21st. Stephen Wayne Savelle, Odessa. Stephen enlisted in the United States Army on June 20, 1967. He then served in Vietnam from October 1, 1969 to February 1, 1970. He was discharged at Fort Hood in 1974. In 1969, he met Alvarina Halverson Savelle in Odessa, Texas. They were married on September 30, 1970, here in Odessa, Texas. He leaves behind his wife, Alvarina Halverson Savelle, son Michael Ray Savelle, son Caleb Ray Savelle, daughters Ashley Lynn Savelle Armendariz and husband Luis, Stephanie Ann Savelle, Edie Savelle, brothers Dennis R. Savelle and Alan Savelle, plus grandchildren. Visitation will be held Tuesday, February 22nd from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held Wednesday, February 23rd at 10 a.m. in the chapel of Odessa Funeral Home with Pastor Bill Prosser officiating. Burial with military honors will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, February 22nd at the Texas State Veterans Cemetery at Abilene. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at odessafuneralhome.com for the Savelle family. Aaron Mark Taylor, Roswell. Aaron Mark Taylor, age 46, passed away after a brief illness Wednesday, February 2nd, 2022. He was born to Linda Clancy and Michael Taylor, November 4th, 1975, in Big Spring. Aaron married his love, Stephanie Taylor, August 27, 2005, in Odessa. Aaron is survived by his wife, Stephanie, and two sons, Jaden Taylor and Levi Wiggins, father Michael Taylor and stepmother Denise Taylor, brother Jason Taylor and sister-in-law Carrie, sister Megan Petrie and brother-in-law Joel, brother Stephen Berry, plus nieces and nephews. A celebration of Aaron's life will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, February 24th in the chapel at Crossroads Fellowship, 6901 East Highway 191, Odessa, Texas. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made to the Live Like Riley Foundation, which honors the memory of Aaron's niece, Riley. You may make donations by going to LiveLikeRiley.org and noting in memory of Aaron Taylor. Please take a moment and share a kind thought or memory with Aaron's family at www.andersonbethany.com. Aaron's tribute was written in his honor by his family.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, February 20th. This section is called Other Voices. This column is called Guest Views. It is entitled Guidelines Detail How to Spend ARPA Funds by Dustin Fawcett. Fawcett is a candidate for Ector County Judge. The American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 brought about an allocation of $32 million in two separate $16 million installments to Ector County. While many counties in Texas have been working tirelessly with their communities on how they plan to utilize these funds, Ector County has done very little, other than determining they will hire a third-party firm to assist in this process. Our neighbors to the north in Lubbock County have held at least 14 public meetings specifically for how the community thinks they should spend these ARPA funds. Counties throughout Texas have provided outline plans based on their community's involvement in the process. Yet Ector County has not publicized a single document of planning. Additionally, Lubbock County has already allocated $938,798 to their various fire departments, which includes their volunteer fire departments, for personal protective equipment and other life-saving necessities. Our neighbors to the east in Midland County have already allocated $2.4 million to Midland Memorial of their ARPA funds to use on contract staff and incentive pay for current staff. The city of Odessa has allocated $3 million to Medical Center Hospital out of these funds and $1 million to Odessa Regional Medical Center. Yet the county continues to sit on their hands. This piece of legislation is relatively specific in that it outlines what the funds can be spent on. They are very broad categories with a large amount of latitude for local governments to allocate this funding in ways they see fit. The argument that this legislation has, quote, all kinds of strings attached, unquote, is simply false, and a cop-out to not getting to work on behalf of the people. If you visit the Texas Association of Counties website, you can see that, quote, Treasury guidelines allow broad actions by local governments to, one, support the public health response to the coronavirus pandemic, two, address the negative economic effects caused by COVID-19 by aiding workers and families, small businesses, nonprofits, or industries such as tourism and travel that were hit particularly hard by the pandemic. Three, replace lost public sector revenue. Four, provide premium pay for workers performing essential work during the pandemic. Five, invest in water and sewer infrastructure. 6. Invest in broadband infrastructure. We should be holding regular meetings of all the taxing entities, as well as with key stakeholders and the general public, about what best benefits the citizens of Ector County. Water infrastructure in West Odessa, as well as broadband infrastructure, an issue I have worked intimately on with the Connector Task Force, which is working with the State Broadband Office and the Federal Reserve, are two main components that should be prioritized along with allocating a portion to our local hospitals. We need an action plan, and we need it now. The community deserves it. For far too long, we have been reactive rather than proactive when it comes to county governance. Ector County residents deserve better. This is the letter to the editor. Odessa needs meaningful changes, not more pre-K. I read with interest the opinion piece in Wednesday's Odessa American by Mona Sharon about the pre-K broken promises. I could have told her that. Studies have been done for years that have shown any gains by young children academically participating in pre-K programs are lost by the eighth grade. To me, there is not much difference in President Biden's push for pre-K in his Build Back Better program and the efforts that were put forth in President Lyndon Johnson's Great Society program that featured Head Start for preschool children back in the 1960s. When are we going to learn from our history and use it productively to make meaningful changes to protect the children and to help parents improve their ability to support their families? If we need childcare for preschoolers so parents can work, let's call it that and put our money into daycare efforts by giving parents help or giving tax credits to businesses providing daycare. Maybe then our school systems could concentrate on educating our kids better than they are currently doing. On another subject, when is Odessa going to quit kicking the can down the road and step up to the plate to support our school system as it needs to create a first-class learning environment for our children? Signed, Charles Cotton, Odessa. This column is called The Other Robin Hood, by Michelle Harmon. Michelle Harmon, EDD, MBA, MED, BS, is a UTPB College of Business senior lecturer. Demand for teachers is at its highest level, and school districts cannot fill the jobs. Districts also need experienced teachers. Why not try and hire more retired teachers to work full-time? It is expensive, and the taxpayer will indirectly pay the surcharge, which is defined as a tax, to the Teacher Retirement System of Texas, TRS, by way of a surcharge penalty tax assessed to school districts for hiring back each retired educator. Are you confused yet? The rules are very complicated and seem to change without notice, as they did during one of the multiple Texas legislative sessions in 2021. The current costs for school districts and public universities to rehire a TRS retired educator are much higher than hiring a beginning teacher. Not only because the base pay is lower for a beginning teacher, but because of the surcharge slash penalty slash tax, the school districts must return to TRS. Is this starting to sound like another Robin Hood? The taxpayers are paying these surcharges. The two largest employers in Ector County and Midland County are the school districts that struggle to be fully staffed. Both school districts have learned to be flexible by taking advantage of various programs and grants to provide them the ability to hire degreed but not certified educators, while the new teachers are getting their certification. Retired educators returning to work would be a wealth of knowledge and experience to improve student outcomes and mentor new teachers. We need to get retired educators back. Many have had a change of circumstance or have found that they cannot live on their retirement checks. Inflation is at a 40-year high, 7.5%. The current return-to-work penalty is 15.75% surcharge on the gross salary, plus a $535 per month surcharge on medical coverage. If the educator has 25 years of experience and makes $75,000 per year, the return-to-work penalty is $11,812 per year surcharge on a 12-month employee, plus a medical coverage surcharge of $6,420. On a 10-month employee, typically a teacher, the districts would pay the surcharges for 10 months. Suppose a retiree returns to work and is over 65. In that case, they will be personally paying for Medicare tax from their gross pay in the school district, plus their standard Medicare fees to Medicare, plus the TRS Medicare supplement fee paid to TRS from their retirement check. Additionally, via our tax dollars, the school district is paying another $535 per month for the medical surcharge on the retiree to TRS. With the financial surcharges slash penalty slash tax being paid to TRS be better spent in our local educators' pockets? School districts also need substitutes. So a retired educator can be hired as substitutes, but not in a vacant teaching position for more than a specified number of days. Substitutes usually make around $100 per day and pay taxes out of the gross. The number of retirees substituting has dropped with COVID. Is that a surprise? The state of Texas does allow school districts to hire retired educators without the financial penalties for the next couple of years if they are solely paid from federal dollars to address COVID-related student gaps. There is also no penalty for educators that retired in 2004 or before. How many of those are still around? Oh, what a tangled web we weave. The state system to rehire retired educators on a temporary or permanent basis is very complicated and confusing at best. Overall, people want more pay and benefits, not less, to remain or return to work. In the non-governmental world of work, the good news is that the IRS has altered its rules regarding hiring retired staff without penalty to the retiree or the company. TRS and the Texas legislature need to catch up. With the tremendous shortage of teachers in Texas, will TRS change its rules?
Business. Scammers on social media steal $770 million from consumers in 2021. Start with trust. Heather Massey. Massey is the Vice President of Communications of the Better Business Bureau in the Permian Basin. Check out www.bbb.org or call 563-1880. Social media is a great way to stay in touch with friends and family and has become an increasingly popular method for marketing a business's services or products to potential buyers. However, reports to BBB Scam Tracker and the Federal Trade Commission, FTC, show that social media is also becoming a prime destination for scammers seeking to con people out of their money. The FTC states that more than one in four people who reported losing money to fraud in 2021 said it started on social media, and the platforms are more profitable for scammers than any other method of contacting people. In 2021, more than 95,000 people reported $770 million in losses to fraud initiated on social media to the FTC, accounting for 25% of all reported losses to fraud for the year. From 2017 to 2021, reported losses to fraud increased 18 times, and the number of people who reported losing money grew to 19 times higher than in 2017. Despite the record highs, these numbers only reflect a fraction of the public who encountered fraud on social media. According to a recently published study conducted by the FTC, only 4.8% of people who experience mass market consumer fraud complained to Better Business Bureau or a government entity. Among those that report fraud encountered on social media, the most common are investment, romance, and online purchase scams. Investment scams. More than half of consumers who reported investment scams in 2021 said the con started on social media, particularly those including fraudulent cryptocurrency investment opportunities. The FTC's Consumer Sentinel Network lists investment-related fraud as the seventh most reported type of fraud in the first three quarters of 2021, with total losses across the U.S. at nearly $956 million, with a median loss of $2,800. Investment scams on social media typically begin as an unsolicited offer or opportunity that promises a guaranteed return of investment that may seem too good to pass up. Often, scammers will hack into the profiles of friends and family members, using their networks to initiate a conversation. Believing that the offer is being recommended from a trusted source, the victim invests and loses their money and their own social media account, which the con artist uses to reach out to another set of targets. In December 2021, one Texas resident reported to BBB Scam Tracker, "The scammer played upon my emotions and accused me of having trust issues and a pessimistic way of thinking that people are only out here to steal money, which is exactly what he did. He stole my money and ended up hacking my Facebook account." Key indications that you may be interacting with an investment scam include: scammers guarantee that you'll make money. Remember that even first-hand testimonials can be faked, especially if they are from a prominent figure. No one can guarantee significant returns, and claims to the contrary should be considered a red flag. Scammers promise free money. Often, scammers may entice victims to provide information or just sign up for an opportunity under the assumption they will give the victim money for free. Almost all free money offers are scams. Scammers promise big claims without details. Scammers will often be vague or nondescriptive when asked how the money will be invested and how returns are handled. Be sure to ask pointed questions about the investment opportunity and take the time to research and verify their claims. Be especially wary of opportunities that require immediate investment or action. Romance scams. According to FTC data, romance scams are the second most profitable fraud on social media, accounting for 24% of all money lost to scams originating on social media in 2021. In a February 10 press release, the FTC reported romance scams hit record highs in 2021 with losses of $547 million, more than six times reported losses in 2017, and a nearly 80% increase from 2020 levels. In particular, reports from consumers ages 18 through 29 increased more than tenfold from 2017 to 2021. On average, victims who lost money to romance scams reported a loss of $2,400. Instances of romance scams reported to BBB and the FTC continue to increase at astonishing rates, said Heather Massey, Vice President of Communications for Better Business Bureau serving the heart of Texas. These con artists may spend weeks or months of their time establishing a relationship with a target, which, inevitably, turns to a request for money to pay for some immediate or emergency situation. Often, con artists will say they live or travel outside of the U.S. and are employed by working on an oil rig, in the military, or as a doctor with an international organization. Soon after establishing a relationship with the victim, the scammer will ask their target for money to help them pay for an immediate or emergency situation, such as a medical operation, travel expenses to come to the U.S., or unpaid debt. Key indications you may be interacting with a romance scam include: scammers provide vague answers to questions. When asked about some of their favorite places to eat, socialize, or visit in the area they claim to live, they often redirect the conversation. They may claim they cannot provide any additional information when asked about the company they are employed with or their specific organization. An unwillingness to provide this information is a key indicator you may be involved with the wrong type of person. Scammers move relationships quickly. For most people, falling in love with a romantic interest takes time and shared experiences. Immediate confessions of adoration and love, even if reciprocated, should be treated with caution before having an opportunity to meet in person or take part in a digital date. Scammers provide edited or fake photos. A common tactic of scammers is to steal photos online of either people they are claiming to be or of locations where they claim to live. Use reverse image search to see if the photo is publicly available or of another person. Look for the hallmarks of edited photos, such as signs of warping, an interrupted background pattern, or missing shadows. Online purchase scams. While online purchase scams come in as the third most profitable scam originating on social media, it is the number one most reported. The FTC states that 45% of the 95,000 scams originated from social media reported to the agency in 2021 were regarding instances of online purchase fraud. Reports to BBB Scam Tracker include examples of fraudulent sellers advertising the sale of small products, such as personalized jewelry, as well as big-ticket items, such as vehicles or boats, which the buyer never receives. Recently, online pet scams have risen to enact a detrimental toll on American consumers, with approximately 80% of sponsored pet ads as fraudulent. According to BBB's 2021 online purchase scams report, one of the most significant factors determining whether a purchaser loses money on an online purchase originating from social media is if that person was actively shopping or passively browsing. 23% of consumers actively shopping on Facebook and Instagram lost money to an online purchase, as opposed to 55% of consumers who were passively browsing on the platforms when they encountered the ad. Key indications you may be interacting with an online purchase scam include: scammers promote deals that seem too good to be true. Everyone wants to find a good deal on a sought-after product, and scammers use this tendency to entice consumers to pay before taking the time to research the business or seller. Scammers use aggressive selling tactics and a sense of urgency. Be wary of deals advertised as limited-time offers or require you to act now under the claim that the deal will disappear. Scammers want quick, anonymous payments. Online sellers that insist on payments through gift cards, wire transfers, or mobile banking apps should be handled with extreme caution, as scammers know that these payment methods are quick, anonymous, and almost impossible to reverse. If you have been a scam victim, report it to BBB Scam Tracker. Information provided may prevent another victim from falling victim. For more information about these and other scams, as well as tips to avoid falling for the schemes of con artists, visit bbb.org.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Losartan and hydrochlorothiazide. Dear Dr. Roach, when is the best time to take my Losartan and hydrochlorothiazide? In the morning or evening? Answer. Losartan and hydrochlorothiazide are most commonly used as treatment for high blood pressure. They are both time-tested medications and have been proven to reduce the risk of stroke in people with high blood pressure. A large trial found that taking blood pressure medications at night led to better control of blood pressure and decreased risk of heart disease than taking the same medications during the day. But some experts have questioned the result, and additional studies are underway. Further, many people find taking a diuretic at nighttime leads to one or more visits to the bathroom at night, disrupting sleep. Still, the best evidence now is that taking blood pressure medication at night might be better, but the jury is still out. What's more important is to be on the right medications for you and to have your blood pressure checked regularly, such as by a high-quality home monitor.
Mother's desire to unplug from the world sparks backlash. Dear Abby, I'm a single stay-at-home mom of a special needs 14-year-old. I also take care of my elderly father. When life starts to overwhelm me, I tend to isolate myself to focus on taking care of my son and dad and taking care of my mental health. I haven't even been on social media in 3 years. Because of it, I've lost touch with many friends and family members. I'm now being called antisocial and a few other not-so-nice names. How can I get people to understand that this is how I handle stress and it has nothing to do with them? Signed, Stressed Out in California. Dear Stressed Out, explain, as you have to me, that when you become stressed, your coping mechanism is to isolate yourself, and your silence is not meant to be offensive. If you are told your silence was hurtful, apologize and point out that because you are stretched thin, sometimes you are overwhelmed and need to quietly recharge. Many people cope with stress the way you do. If it works for you, more power to you. Dear Abby, I'm an 11th grader. My parents have been putting massive amounts of pressure on me about college, and it's stressing me into oblivion. When I try to talk to them about it, they tell me I should be, and already should have been, more involved in my college applications process, academics, and preparing for college. They say those should be my top priorities right now, and have gone so far as to restrict what I can do, getting a job, hanging out, extracurriculars, etc. How do I get them to lay off? Signed, Burned Out in South Carolina. Dear Burned Out, a way to do that would be to show your parents the extent to which you are working on your college applications, as well as your grade point average. They're trying to make you focus because they fear you won't be accepted if you don't. If the pressure is really too much for you, discuss this with a counselor at school so that that person can intercede for you. Dear Abby, my younger daughter, Bree, recently moved back into my home after her graduation from university. She's very opinionated and wants things her way. My other daughter, Tammy, will be visiting and would like to bring along her New Yorkie, which is fully housebroken. I don't mind as long as the dog stays off the furniture. Bree doesn't like animals indoors because of negative experiences with a prior roomie's dog and has forbidden it. I let her know that this is my home and she may not forbid anything. It blew up into a huge thing, and now Tammy has second thoughts about her visit and wants to cancel. Help. Signed, Fur Baby Fiasco in New Mexico. Dear Fiasco, inform Bree, whose sense of entitlement is eyebrow-raising, that she owes her sister an apology for the way she behaved. Reiterate that this is your home and you, not she, will decide who may visit. Then set a realistic date after which Bree should be living independently because if you don't, she may wind up ruling your roost.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.